to finish this Revelation series someday. You do realize that, right? Because as I was looking at the book here that I'm basing my studies on, I want to show you where we are, what we've done, and what we have to do. This is what we've done. You see the bottom part of this book? We've done this. This is what is left, the top part. Look carefully if you're on the studio cam. I'm using this book as a guide. This bottom part, done that. Been there, done that. Top part, still yet to do. But if you can see, there's less up top than there is at the bottom. That is because, ladies and gentlemen, using my supreme powers of logic, the reason is because we are more than halfway through here. So welcome again to the Revelation series. And I told you I was going to start today with a Second Thessalonians. I had a good night's sleep. Thank you very much. I was exhausted yesterday. All the traveling. And it ain't over. All right. Anyway, Second Thessalonians 2. Oh, we were talking about it was powers. It was the miracle thing. Now, why was I talking about signs and wonders? Let's see now. Oh, yes, because the false prophet does signs and calls for worship because we're entering the temple section. And the great image has miraculous powers. And we especially need to be aware of this threat today that as the kingdom approaches, I got two ways of looking at this. The less cynical side of me says that as the kingdom approaches, we may possibly see legitimate signs and wonders as the powers of the kingdom draw near again. And I've been on record as saying that, I think. But I'm not as sure now about that as I was, and I think it's risky business because of the prevalence of the false signs and miracles and the fact that false miracles, false signs will be the preeminent sign of the lawless one and of the great image. And now I turn to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. The secret of lawlessness is already operating. That is verse 7. The secret of lawlessness is this, is that lawlessness is given a facade of righteousness. I will say that again. The secret of lawlessness, again, is that lawlessness is given a facade of righteousness. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, we know Satan disguised as a messenger of light. And so, if we have an entire religion looking for signs, wonders, and miracles, and if these are provided by Satan, because Satan can do these things, oh, he's very tricky. He can do false signs. He can make it look real, of course. But if people are disposed to a soulish and emotional pull, speaking also of the worship of angels, many in Christianity, especially this time of year, they like little angels on their tree. And they have porcelain images of angels. And they want their angels to protect them. And they talk to their angels. And I have a strong feeling, it's more than that. It's scriptural evidence that they're not talking to angels. They're talking to demons. And they're being led astray from the truth because they're so easily captured by emotions. Satan knows this. And it is the backbone of organized religion because organized religion caters to those who need emotional vindication, that there's a God, emotional vindication, that they're one with God, that God is in them. And we know that our apostle calls us past that, away from it. Into maturity, mature spiritual truth doesn't see anything. Now, you are aware, Paul says, what is detaining the man of lawlessness for him to be unveiled in his own era. I'm in verse 7 now of 2 Thessalonians 2. For the secret of lawlessness, just explain that, is already operating. It was operating in Paul's day. It's coming to a head today. Only when the present detainer may be coming out of the midst, then will be unveiled the lawless one, whom the Lord will dispatch with the spirit of his mouth, and will discard by the advent of his presence. Okay, this is not instantaneous. You have to watch scripture there. Be very, very careful. It seems to be that when the lawless one is revealed, bang, the Lord dispatches him with the spirit of his mouth. The spirit of his mouth. That's what it says here. Dispatch with the spirit of his mouth. Oh, well, I think it's kind of like in the Garden of Gethsemane when he spoke, I am. Are you the one we're looking for? I am. And they fell backwards. That's the spirit of his mouth. All figurative. We'll discard by the advent of his presence. That happens later. The advent of his presence comes at least 3.5 years after the man of lawlessness is unveiled. Possibly 7. The full 7. Now let's talk specifically of the man of lawlessness in verse 9, whose presence is in accord with the operation of Satan, reminding you that this is the white horse rider. The white horse rider that initially appears at the beginning of these things is in accord with the operation of Satan, white horse, minister of righteousness, with all power and signs and false miracles, all power. That's going to be pretty deceptive, pretty tricky. When you have all power, or you purport to have all power, people believe you have all power, and false miracles. But you see, oh gosh, my sister Kelly was showing me this satanic book she has. You may have heard of this. Course in Miracles. It is a complete New Age falsification. A woman who said she was taught by Jesus Christ, and it's just total BS. But it's very obvious BS. But even so, some of my sister's acquaintances still believe it, even though it's obvious BS. So that, anyway, say no more about that. But the false miracles of the highest degree and the highest order will be so seductive that even the elect would be deceived if possible. False miracles with every seduction, there it is. Every seduction of injustice among those. Here is the group that is going to be tricked by the trickster. The trickster is Satan or the man of lawlessness. Among those who are perishing because they do not receive the love of the truth for their salvation. No love of the truth. What did Jesus say? People love tradition more than truth, and they do. People love acceptance. I said this way back early in the Revelation series, probably in the first couple weeks. I'm going to say it again. If Christians today had been born in a Middle Eastern country, they would be Muslims. They would not be in that country and all of a sudden have this desire to look into Jesus because the true Spirit of God dwells within them. No. And if they had been born in India, they would seek out Krishna or whatever, the one of the 200,000 gods of the Hindu pantheon. But the fact is that they're born in the U.S. of A., or they're born in Europe, or they're born in South America. And so it's not the truth that they want. They are going to join the popular religion. That's the issue. And it doesn't matter where you're born. If you have a heart for belonging, and if your primary concern, that thing which soothes your harried soul, is to have camaraderie in this life and to have to walk down the path, to meander even down the path of least resistance, then you will embrace the pop religion of your culture. And so I don't believe for a second that any of the Christians today actually love Jesus Christ, actually love God, actually love the truth. I know they don't. And the only reason we think they do is that they happened, quote unquote, to be born in North America or Europe or South America, and they were presented with the false religion of their forebears, of their forefathers, of their culture. And in this case, in the case of Western nations, the false religion is Christianity. But I tell you, wherever they were born, they would jump headfirst into that religion. Oh no, Martin. Oh, if I was born in India, I would pierce through the veil of darkness to find Jesus because I love Jesus. No, you just love whatever religion happens to be around that everybody else has joined because you are a joiner too. And you want to join what everyone else has joined because you hate to feel like an outsider because that makes you feel like an outsider. And the result of not receiving the love of the truth, that was my original contention that set me off on that rant, is that there's no salvation there. They do not receive the love of the truth. They don't have the love of the truth. They have the love of popularity. They have the love of the herd. They have the love of the crowd. That's their love. They don't love the truth. If they loved the truth, that then when you told them the truth, they would engage with it. But instead, they run to their pastor. Pastor, this guy says something very different than what I've been taught. They don't love the truth for their salvation. There it is. The result of not loving the truth is no salvation. Sorry about that. And of course, if there are any new people to the show today, thanks for being here. Hope you're here tomorrow. After today, I don't know. This is speaking of aeonian salvation. This is the special salvation given to believers. They're still saved in the end. They still come to God to worship Him for eternity by virtue of the cross of Jesus Christ, because if there are any new listeners, Jesus Christ came to take away the sins of the world, according to the angel Gabriel, I think it was, in Gospel of John. And I, Martin Zender, had the audacity to believe that he successfully did that. And therefore, I'm back in the scriptures now, verse 11, God will be sending them an operation of deception. God would never do that, Martin. God does not send people operations of deception. Well, here's exhibit A that he does. Therefore, God will be sending them an operation of deception for them to believe the falsehood. He wants them to believe the falsehood because he needs vessels of honor and vessels of dishonor. He needs an antagonist against which to exercise the virtues of his protagonist. That's our God for you. This would all be intolerable if eternal torment were true. Because these people to whom God sent the operation of deception, they're going to hell forever. So we have to deliver God of responsibility for that. Therefore, we will throw out all the scripture verses that speak of the sovereignty of God, and we will give humanity a free will. The only problem is we have to ignore about, 100, 200, 300 scriptures to do that, but that's okay. We've brushed so many scriptures under the rug that the rug looks like a beret on the Matterhorn. It doesn't bother them as long as they can be in the popularity club. And look around you, ladies and gentlemen, the popularity club that we are surrounded with is Christianity.